Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Live from the Nasdaq market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. Rate rebound. The 10-year rising sharply as fears mount that inflation isn't fading and the Fed could stay on the sidelines. The impact on stocks, debt markets, and the consumer coming up. Plus, TikTok trouble. Is the brewing ban of the Chinese social media app setting the stage for a major battle with Beijing? We'll debate that. And later, a sporting surge for the retail stock. The buzz on Altria's sale of Bud shares and Tesla's electric slide rolls on. I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq. On the desk tonight, Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, Dan Nathan, and Guy Adami. We start off with the latest escalation of tensions between Washington and Beijing. China's foreign ministry responding with some sharp words to the U.S. House, passing a TikTok crackdown bill. A spokesman saying today that the vote, quote, lets the United States stand on the opposite side of the principles of fair competition and international trade rules, and that if so-called national security reasons can be used to willfully suppress other countries' superior companies, there would be no fairness to speak of. The comments come as former U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin made a surprise announcement this morning that he is looking to buy TikTok from its parent company. But would a deal like this ever be allowed to even go through? Is it just a sign that we are on the precipice of a real blow to U.S.-China relations that the market isn't pricing in at this point? Tim, what do you think?
I think there's no question we've had different points in the last couple of years where it felt like tensions were escalating to a point where almost like, how could you not? Huawei, I thought, was the spot. And again, all the different ways in which we pushed back on essentially the national champion mobile phone company in China. I think the dynamic here, the fact that I think TikTok felt like they were out of the woods. The Journal has an interesting article today how officials at TikTok were kind of blindsided because when President Biden's, re-election team, his campaign team actually signed up for a TikTok account, they're like, I guess we're good. We talk all the time about the companies, and it's not just Apple, Nike, and Starbucks, that have listed China for the last decade as their key growth engine. Well, Karen will talk about Ulta tonight. He was talking about international. I mean, there's a whole lot of dynamics here. You think of the spirits companies, a lot of consumer staples, but a lot of American brands have relied upon China to the extent that not only if the U.S. follows through on a ban, you can be pretty sure that that ban's going to be a domino that goes around the world, I think. And obviously, that's going to only, exacerbate the pain here. So I do think there are bigger ramifications. I do think that the political cycle is such that this bipartisan issue is one that I think there are folks from both sides are going to push the buttons.
The other thing that the China Foreign Ministry spokesperson said is that these actions will come back to bite the U.S., which sounds like
retaliation. Okay, but this is actually, I don't think it should be considered a unilateral move, right? Google's not there. Mm-hmm. Facebook's not there. And so,
but they weren't banned per se.
No, they are.
Well, the great firewall. Well, they are allowed to operate in a way that they operate.
They would want to operate.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think of it as similar. Unlike the tariffs, which we sort of did unilaterally, kind of the last administration, put
that
on.
What if they operated in China, and then China decided after a while, after they surpassed Alibaba and other, homegrown companies, that they didn't want Google or Microsoft or any of these other companies to be there, and then said, now you get out?
I feel like that's sort of what they did, made it so,
onerous.
Yes, that they sort of had to leave. So I don't know. There's so much momentum around this now, as you said. I mean, it's a bipartisan issue, and so I think we'll see it. We'll get to the potential bid, but that was kind of shocking.
But to Tim's point, there are companies that do operate. McDonald's spoke at a UBS conference yesterday, and for different reasons, but China was mentioned due to the sluggish start at the beginning of the year. Their words, not mine. But you layer this on top of that, and that's a problem for some of these multinationals without question. And I still think the biggest bullseye is on the back of Apple, which has obviously sold off, seemingly found a bid here at 170 or so. But if the Chinese want to ratchet this thing up, I think Apple's the first place they go.
Yeah, and then Tesla, obviously. So when you think about this, all right, so the Great Firewall, our companies, our digital companies can't operate in China the way they can in the West. So it makes it very unappealing to them. And so You know, to me, when I think about this, let's be clear. This is not a ban. It's a divestiture. What TikTok is saying, that a divestiture bill that is approved and signed by our president is doing the things that will cause a ban and then the chain reaction, the retaliation. Again, that seems kind of odd to me, considering it is not a level playing field between our digital companies and their access to their consumers. But then you got to ask yourself the question, why is the Chinese government so interested in this one situation? Maybe it is the thing that we can all agree on. We can agree on very little in this country right now, but we can agree on the fact that there is a potential threat of the Communist Party in China having full, you know, basically control over the company that has full ownership of this product, right? And so if that's what is being agreed upon, then the idea of a divestiture and then some sort of firewall between what the Communist Party has access to and not makes perfect sense.
Because isn't it that ban is first or divestiture?
No, I think it's basically it's then they'll
ban
be,
or divest or ban.
Divest or get out.
Divest
yeah, but
ban.
There's time in between right, that, which is the same thing that happened during the Trump administration, and then nothing happened. And then Trump got bought and paid for and flip-flopped on the whole thing. So my question to you is, now that his boy Mnuchin is putting together a bid for the company, when does Trump flip-flop on this? How does he get bought and paid for a second time? Do you know what I mean? So, like, again, that's what this is coming down to, some cheesy politics.
Well,
I mean,
the argument of the Chinese government is that basically they passed this bill, or they're going to pass this bill and make it legislation, and it's going to allow the U.S. to effectively seize control of a very valuable asset. They're going to create the market conditions where this asset can be bought and put on the market. So, and that's sort of the argument.
And they'll control that narrative, and then they'll push right. back in ways that we probably haven't even talked about yet.
Sure.
And again, I don't think the market is pricing any of this in at all. Maybe it's starting to in the form of, I said, McDonald's, maybe Apple, maybe Tesla. But in terms of the broader market, absolutely not. And what's interesting about that, you can actually sort of make a bullish case for the FXI, which was lower today, and some of these individual names, as counterintuitive as that may seem. So I still think the China trade works here.
Well, it's also a time when we have this deglobalization. Lori brought that point up yesterday. It's exactly what's been going on. And you have a case where I just think, you know, they talk about a dynamic where either divest or ban. You know, I've been investing in countries around the world where, you know, threat of takeover is something that was there always. So and the U.S., I mean, you can look at this from the other side and say there could be a real challenge to the sanctity of our markets and of our economy if it's viewed that, you know, that any sector could be deemed a strategic sector. And this is what goes on around the world. Again, natural resources, you know, telecom, and certainly in China, by the way. I mean, so, you know, this is a lot of consistency, but call it what it is. I mean, this stuff has been going on in other parts of the world. And as an investor, often when I've seen that happen to companies that were foreign companies in localities that I thought were, you know, great growth opportunities, made me not want to invest there. So I do think this is not a threat to, you know, U.S. trade, but I do think we have to understand the context of this. And this has been going on in other parts of the world for a long time.
Well, one of the things I thought was interesting was this, and I think you talked about it last night, Letter X, U.S. Steel, the idea of this company being not allowed to be purchased by what is considered a close ally of the United States,
right,
with no overlap, with no technology basically getting transferred to Japan. I mean, it's a little bit, that to me makes me far less comfortable than this, right? The TikTok threat I can see is far
I agree,
more
and there's
important.
Tons of, there's. I mean, steel is not a strategic asset. You can make an argument that U.S. Steel by its name seems strategic, but U.S. Steel hasn't been strategic since the 60s.
Right. For more on the TikTok fallout and the state of U.S.-China relations, let's bring in CNBC contributor DeWardrick McNeil. He's Longview Global's managing director, senior policy analyst. DeWardrick, great to have you with us. It sounds like you're not as worried as maybe some here on the desk are about what is going on with TikTok.
I'm certainly worried about the security concerns. I understand those. But, you know, when I heard the announcement this morning by former Secretary of Treasury Mnuchin, my thought was, pump our brakes, because there's a lot left to go here before we get to divestiture. This thing has landed in the Senate. If it goes into committee, it is likely going to stall. If it goes to the Senate Intelligence Committee, that's Warner and Rubio, maybe it'll move faster. But if it goes through the Committee for Commerce, Science, and Technology, Ted Cruz, who's a ranking member, that has already said that he wants full amendments on this thing. So we're a long ways away from divestiture. So I am concerned about TikTok, but I'm not at the point yet where I think we're at divestiture.
There's also, as I understand it, you know, China has to approve this deal. I mean, the algorithm, which is the secret sauce for TikTok, that's a key technology. And so China would have to agree to export, to have an export license for this technology in order for this deal to go through, I think. Otherwise, you're buying a shell of a company.
That's the real question. Look, I think that the Chinese government has been very clear. They have no interest in having this algorithm owned by anyone in the U.S. If you listen to the announcement on our air this morning, Secretary Mnuchin kind of threw a crumb out by saying, if this were to happen, we would use U.S. technology to do this, meaning not the algorithm. But then the question is, what do you have? Do you have TikTok that's so popular with creators and with teens? It's hard to say.
To Warwick, it feels like some of the rhetoric around investing or trading in China was at its worst in January when everything bottomed out. And I think Tim agrees. I feel the same way, that I think there's a trade there on the long side. I'm not suggesting long-term investment. What are your thoughts on a short-term trade in FXI or some of the individual names?
Yeah, as you well know, I'm going to be hesitant to get into trading advice. Let me just say that I don't believe, speaking at a macro level about the Chinese economy, that we're anywhere near being out of the water. None of the major problems have been solved. You have this new statement about new productive forces, EV, advanced manufacturing, those sectors. But those are the very sectors that you will find the U.S. is in direct competition with China on. So it's fuzzy to me in terms of what is available for long-term investing in China. But I can say, coming off the back of the National People's Congress, I'm not convinced that there's been any solvency in the short term or the long term for what's next in China to drive growth.
Does what's going on with TikTok change your view of the state of U.S.-China relations? And how do you see the trajectory of those relations as we progress in the year, particularly as we approach the election? And if Donald Trump is reelected president, that would really, I mean, he's already talked about a 60% plus tariff on Chinese goods.
Yeah, that's a good question, Melissa. Let's park Trump as president for now. Just look at these next 235 days or so before the election. Look, I don't think the TikTok announcement has done anything to really upset the San Francisco agreement to maintain high-level dialogue between the U.S. and China. I think what you have here is what we should always expect. This is not going to be a relationship that's without competition. It's not going to be a relationship without friction. But I don't see the TikTok divestiture bill as one that either side is prepared to blow up the bilateral relationship over. So I think we're holding serve from where we were and after the APEC meeting between Biden and Xi in San Francisco.
And then with a Trump presidency, what happens, do you think?
Who knows? I can tell you right now it's going to be a lot of chaos for sure. I think trade is certainly going to be back on the table. The 60% tariff issues. People think that that's fantasy, but look, I have to take the former president at his word. He has been prepared to go farther than anyone else I've seen at total disruption. And so we should prepare ourselves for that again.
All right, DeRodrick, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
DeRodrick McNeil of Longview. What do you think about what's going on here?
I mean, I was just reading this in the information. I mean, you know, Rupert Murdoch had to become a U.S. citizen to own a media company here in the U.S. This was, you know, decades ago. This is the FCC has rules about indirect ownership of media companies, and they have caps on this sort of stuff. And to me, it doesn't seem like this is so out of left field. And I just, again,
it's not. But it's not. And yeah. I think everybody agrees it's not. Yeah. And therefore, now what?
Yeah, because but I just go back to the thing. Why is this such a hot button issue? Because the Chinese know that they have this thing that has captivated the world. It's an influencing tool. We've spent so much time since the 2016 election going over all of these different techniques in which different ways populations can be manipulated. This one seems very unique at a time where I just think that they are actually confirming the worst fears that some of us have about the potential risk that this platform is on hundreds of Americans, a hundred of millions of Americans' phones.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things on tariffs. former President Trump definitely has loved using tariffs in the past. We've seen it in the steel industry, and it wasn't great for U.S. Steel, who we've just talked about. China plays the long game. So China doesn't need to react right here and now. And I realize that's kind of a cliche. This is an event. They do need to react. There's certainly been some discussion, and within our government, certain I think some elected officials have been either urged or told not to use TikTok and open accounts. Sounds like SOEs and, you know, companies, state-owned companies inside of China told not to use Apple products. The one thing I'd say, and Dwardrick really is great at speaking about this, is that the diplomatic channel between the U.S. and China is something that if that breaks down, that's a big problem. In other words, like even in our worst of times, and by the way, I feel concerned about this with a lot of other bilateral relationships. In our country, our diplomatic corps is key to keeping people talking and communicating. And that breakdown in communication, which, I think has been exacerbated in the last 5 to 10 years, is something that we can't break down right now.
You mentioned McDonald's as one company operating and dependent on China growth.
100%.
Are you worried about multinationals like a McDonald's or a Starbucks under a Biden administration if he is reelected, or under a Trump administration, or both?
Well,
to varying degrees.
And it's not political. I'd be more concerned under a Trump administration. So that's the answer to the question. But it's interesting Tim brought up the tariffs, because if you want a little history lesson, go back to U.S. Steel into basically the winter of 2018, February to be exact. I think that's when a lot of these U.S. Steel was lower left, upper right, doing amazingly well. Tariffs get announced, and that stock went from 48 down to about $15 in pretty much a straight line. So you can say tariffs are good, but they have ramifications for the multinationals and our domestic companies here.
So we try to translate all this. What's the trade? I do think, you know, the onshoring, the reshoring, nearshoring, all of the infrastructure bill beneficiaries, all of that trade continues to work.
We have an earnings alert here on Adobe, the software company, sinking in the after hours despite a top and a bottom line beat, now down to almost 11%. Adobe missing Wall Street estimates for quarterly revenue guidance as well. The CEO just on CNBC in the last hour reacting to the quarter. Christina Partsenevels has got the details. Hey, Christina.
No, hi, Melissa. There was caution heading into this print with Adobe shares underperforming the IGF software ETF month to date. And then further caution post earnings with, like you mentioned, the stock down double digits. Even after the CEO came on our airways to talk about record revenues and digital marketing. But what we saw, despite the Q1 beat and the $25 billion share buyback program, investors noted the miss for Q2 revenue guidance and a slight miss for net new digital media annual reoccurring revenue, which came in at $432 million, which is higher than FactSet estimates, but less than buy-side estimates of $440 million, and that's a key metric for Adobe investors. A major overhang is competition from OpenAI's new text-to-video generator, Sora. Adobe's CEO was on in just the last hour, and he said he believes competition will create a, quote, explosion in the amount of video, and Adobe is going to be one of the beneficiaries. So it seems like he's not too worried. Adobe also has a summit at the end of the month, March 26th, with expected new product announcements to calm those fears that it could be losing market share to OpenAI and fall behind in the AI race. Stock, though, says otherwise.
Christina, thank you. Christina Partsenevelis. For the show, we're saying it seems like every quarter Adobe reports, whatever they say, the stock goes down immediately.
And this is another one of those situations. So quarter is fine. The guidance was a tad light. I think Adobe, and please don't at me, but I think they're the 40th largest company on the planet, for context. Stock moves 12% on what was light guidance. That, to me, speaks to a lot of things that David Einhorn was talking about. But the fact that they're implementing $25 billion stock buy, it's 10% of the market cap of the company. You're looking for a place to buy the stock, not sell it, and you're getting pretty close.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, down at $500, it's been, you know, technical support for the last 6-7 months or so, and you do have this user event, or, you know, where they're going to be detailing some products, and if the kind of story is that they're not keeping up the pace with what's coming out of OpenAI, we get it. Like, that's OpenAI is in front of so many incumbents right now on so many different levels. The problem is that you have a company or you have a stock that's trading at 32 times expected earnings and sales growth, about 11 or 12% for the next couple of years. And so, you know, it's interesting that there's parts of this generative AI trade in the public markets where people don't care about valuation. And then in a situation where these will clearly be a beneficiary and they will clearly make good M&A decisions and the like here and have good product offerings and the like. But in the meantime, it's just not being appreciated because there's no there.
All right, coming up, the earnings train keeps rolling on. Beauty retailer Ulta reversing lower on its latest report. The numbers and more from the quarter next, plus Lithium America's shares surging after the miner got a big boost in its attempts to boost production. The headline that has options traders salivating right after this.
This is Fast Money with Melissa Lee, right here on CNBC.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert on Ulta Beauty after hitting an all-time high earlier today. Shares of the makeup retailer down in extended trading. That's despite reporting a beat on the top and bottom line for its latest quarter. Let's get to CNBC's Courtney Reagan for the details. Hey, Court.
Hi, Melissa. Yeah, so Ulta actually putting up a stronger than expected quarter for earnings, for revenue, for comparable sales. The retailer's full-year revenue forecast also stronger than consensus, though its earnings guidance range, that is a little light, so that could be part of the reason that we're seeing the share sell-off here, or it could also be some sell on the news, some profit taking. Shares have been up about 14% over the last 3 months, over this last quarter they just reported, which is well above the retail ETF, the XRT, and the broader S&P 500 index. CEO Dave Kimball says Ulta is forming a new joint venture with AXO to open Ulta Beauty in Mexico in 2025, and notes international expansion represents an incremental long-term opportunity as it evaluates different operating models, partners, and geographies. Didn't share much more than that on the call. They said right now for competitive reasons, but will tell us more when they are able to. Also on the call, Kimball said that skincare was the strongest category, up double digits when you're talking about sales growth there. Makeup comps did fall single digits, but also called out some strength in the higher-end, almost luxury names like Dior and Pat McGrath at Ulta this past quarter. Melissa, back over to you.
All right. Courtney, thanks. Courtney Reagan. And these results come after Dick's Sporting Goods posted their biggest gain in nearly 3 years after their results this morning. So, Karen, what do you make of this Ulta trade? I know you follow this one.
I do. I'm long Ulta. I'm short a little bit of upside calls, not enough. But I thought it was fine. I thought, as Courtney said, I mean, it's had a huge run, all-time highs going into this earnings, higher PE multiple than they've had taking out the pandemic, which was sort of a one-off situation. So I think also of them as under-promise, over-deliver. They're doing everything right. The margins look good. I thought the revenue was good. I thought it was all good, actually, just not enough in this tape and with that run. But I'm happy to be long. Wish I could buy some. Actually, I could shortly where it is right now. I think there's a call going on as we speak.
The full year. So this was the fourth quarter. The full year guide scared me. $26.20 to $27 wide below. I think $27.10 was consensus. OK, but margins, operating margins beat by 80 basis points. Their sales outpaced their inventory. I think inventories only grew about 8.5% year over year. So that's in line, which theoretically should mean margins continue to probably do very well. Valuation isn't nuts. I mean, it's probably, what, 24 times-ish, maybe 25 times?
A little lower, I think.
Maybe even a little lower. So I think, again, like we talked about Adobe, you're looking for a place to buy the stock, not sell it.
Well, it's cheaper than the E in Blysep, which is Estee Lauder, which is mine. And I'll tell you, I mean, we just referenced this in the last block, which is that I think beauty suffers significantly from TikTok ban. And it's partially because that channel has proven to be gold for a lot of the beauty companies. And there's a view that Ulta, with their UB Media, is so far ahead of everybody else and has some of the size and scale to pass it. But, you know, to me, I look at some of the other players. So Estee Lauder, it is a story where we've known all about the China problem. And if anything, I think there's some innovation. I think it's a company that clearly recognizes they need to move quickly. I think some of the channel dynamics have cleaned themselves up a bit. So, you know, to me, it's hard. I mean, Ulta is so far like the best in class in that space, and Estee Lauder is not. But often I find that an interesting trade.
Nobody wants to talk about dicks? No, I'm serious. I mean, it was up double digit percentage.
Well, look.
It was up 2.8% in terms of sales, even though transactions were flat. So they're, you know.
Yeah, the ticket sizes are better, and it's a case where I was of the view that the pull forward from COVID for some of these retailers, including Best Buy, was so extraordinary that they would never see it as good again, and totally wrong. So not long the name, but obviously an impressive move today.
That will make, so we do this highlight reel every year? That'll make the highlight reel. That silence after that question, absolutely. I'm just telling you now. So you could just wait until when we do, like December? Just mark this day, peeps. I'm just telling you.
But it's true.
Yeah,
you guys are talking about it. There are a lot of interesting things out of the Dick's call.
Yeah, absolutely.
Including the supply chain costs coming down,
and
which
hurt
from other retailers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, there's a lot to like. Yeah. I mean, the margins were really good. I mean, they did everything right. And it's not crazy expensive either. I think that they're sort of the one to beat in this industry.
It's amazing how Mel positioned it. She was just asking a question.
I was just asking a question. It is a stock that was on the move today.
I understand. But he's getting mad at me. I just sat here dumb like I typically do. Right. I didn't change anything.
That was quite a face.
There's a lot more Fast Money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
We're mining for profits. One lithium company hitting pay dirt and seeing shares surging to their highs of the year. The headline that has options traders scrambling for picks and shovels. Next. Plus, debt's a dangerous game. Why our next guest is sounding the alarm on two major events that he says could have global implications. And why this year's elections might be make or break for the economy. You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Shares of Lithium Americas charging as much as 33% higher today, though they closed just up about 4.5%. This comes after the company secured a record loan of more than $2 billion from the U.S. Department of Energy. The funding will go to boosting its lithium production in the U.S. The options pit's buzzing on this news. Mike Coe is here to help us break down the action. Mike, what'd you see?
Yeah, we saw 13 times the average daily options volume, almost 14, actually. Calls outpacing puts by almost 3-1. The busiest calls, the April 7.5 strike calls. We saw a pile of those trading for about 46 cents. I should say that, of course, the stock did sell off a little bit at the close. So those were more like 20 to 30 cents as of the close. But the stock itself is pre-revenue. So it is, in fact, a call option in and of itself. So you should think of these as calls on calls.
Mike, thanks. Mike Coe with the options action on LAC. This is interesting in terms of this loan. This is the biggest U.S. deposit of lithium, the Thacker Pass mine. We've actually talked to the CEO in the past.
You know, these are secular stories that are, Tim's talked about, uranium, lithium. These are stories that are not going to go away. And if you believe...
This fits into the China conversation.
100%. Yeah. Any energy conversation. So if you think energy is going to continue to grow, I mean, all these things play into why both uranium and lithium, I think, work.
And then look at copper today.
Yeah, and I do think that while copper is not a strategic metal, I mean, I do think there are dynamics. Think about the electric grid. Think about the demand that's on copper production. And back to lithium, I mean, Cowen pointed out that at least this loan de-risks the story. So you can have a growth story where they can burn and seemingly have a backstop. That's interesting as an investor.
Coming up, debt danger from treasury bonds to mortgages. Our next guest says where there's debt, there's major risk lurking. Why he's sounding the alarm next. Plus, refiners looking fine. Oil's jumped back over 80 bucks, pumping up gains in a handful of names. Can the rally continue? We've got some answers right after this.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money podcast. We're back right after this.
Well, Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks pulling back today, but finishing off the lows following another hot inflation report. The Dow dropping 137 points, the S&P falling about 15 points, and the Nasdaq sliding 49. The higher-than-expected growth in producer prices sent Treasury yields higher, with the 10-year yield touching 4.3% for the first time this month, and the 2-year nearing 4.7%. Bitcoin, meantime, pulling back after hitting another record this morning. The cryptocurrency dropping as much as 5%, trading for a time below $70,000. And finally, Tesla tumbling again, another 4% down today. UBS saying it is difficult to see a near-term catalyst that will improve EV sentiment. The stock is down nearly 35% this year. Are you surprised by this sliding Tesla action?
No, well, if we're being honest, I mean, I'm wrong all the time, but this one, I think we've done a decent job. I mean, this is it's a margin story. Mm-hmm. 2 or 3 quarters ago, they told us that, you know what, that's it. That's trough margins. The market got excited. The stock rallied. Turns out that's not the case. And as they get closer to legacy automaker margins, the more the stock gets sold off. And I still think 153 or so is a level where you want to get re-engaged. You're not pressing shorts here. You're looking for an opportunity to own it. But I don't think it's at these current levels.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, it's a tough short at this point. The sentiment is so bad. And I think the street analysts are kind of catching up to where the deliveries of this quarter are. And then they're going to extrapolate out for the balance of the year. And it really looks like this is the first year they could go negative as far as delivery growth. And that, to me, changes the dynamic of the stories, especially when you consider what the margin situation looks like, the competitive situation looks like, the Chinese situation. And don't think for a second, maybe one of the sellers here is Elon Musk. You know, when you think about it, he's pledged a lot of his shares.
You would have to know, though.
Well, okay, you might know
soon
enough.
He's not great at filing on time. I'll give you that.
Okay, I'm just saying, but this has been the case in other situations like this. So,
right.
Yeah, look, in a world where we've started to figure out that there are other companies that are, you know, have a hybrid plan, and that seems to be the story, I still like that story. And a growth company that's not growing. I mean, all we ever heard about with the Tesla multiple is that this was a tech company. It seems to be an auto company right now. And I realize that there are a lot of elements of the story, but I think you just layer in the fact that there have been owners of this stock that at every news point, good or bad, they were in. And I think there's some challenges to that story. And I think the macro challenge in the sector, again, I get back to what Toyota's doing and what GM's doing. And they were beating up stocks and Tesla crushed them. But it's a different story right now.
Meantime, the federal debt load snowballing in recent months, adding about $1 trillion every 100 days and currently sitting near $34.5 trillion in total. The surge raising concerns about higher rates and lower growth in the long run, which her next guest says could make capital more sparse, cut into the number of U.S. debt buyers. Joao Gomez is a professor of finance at the Wharton School. Joao, great to have you with us. I think that a lot of people are worried about the national debt, worried about how we fund everything. But at the same time, it's just something. What is going to push this to the forefront to actually be an impact on the markets?
Hi, Melissa. Thank you for having me. I think some people are worried, but not enough, apparently, certainly not in Washington. I think one thing that could push this to the forefront is we will have a big debate next year about whether to extend the Trump tax cuts or not. I think that's a first order concern. I think that's going to cost a significant amount of money. And we're going to have that debate in the context of a very divisive presidency, whoever wins. And so a certain amount of skepticism about the quality of the fiscal policy that we're going to put in place. So that could bring that debate quite early into next year. So it's not something that I anticipate that it's going to trigger a crisis, but I think we've had 2 warning signs, and it would be silly of us not to listen to them. We've seen last year the 10-year go to 5%. And clearly because of supply, because of too much issuance by the Treasury. And we saw how sensitive that was after the Treasury sort of changed the auction schedule and sort of the amounts being issued. It was a pretty big warning sign. The markets are paying attention to yields at this point. And we're now 4.2, 4.3. It's very different. But the sensitivity is there. And we're issuing about 1.6, 1.8 trillion a year. We need buyers for this. And we need buyers when the Japanese are not buying, when yield curve control has ended in Japan, when the Fed is selling, not buying. This is going to be a lot tougher in the years ahead. And it's also going to take place against the backdrop of a big CapEx cycle that is going to increase demand for capital. You guys talk about AI all the time. It's not just AI. It's sustainability, it's rebuilding supply chains in ways that are more resilient. There's a lot of demand for capital. The world of sort of excess liquidity, very low rates, it's essentially over, at least for the next decade or so. And that kind of headwind is going to place a much bigger demand, I think, on the U.S. fiscal authority to be much more responsible than it has been. So I think markets are starting to pay attention. There's no question. I'm sure a lot of people are, but obviously not in Washington.
Professor Gomez, it's Karen, fellow Quaker here, also with Dan. So is there a number, is there a percent for the 10-year, let's say, where you're like, you know what, that's it. The market will look at that as ringing the bell. This is a problem now, not sometime in the future.
I don't have a number. I do think we just came up with a study, our sort of Wharton budget model came up with a study of how many years it will take until, I'm not worried about the level of the debt right now. Let's be clear. We can afford this level of debt. We can grow out of it. What I'm really worried about is it's going to double a share of GDP in 20 years. That I can't see us as being able to afford. And I think that scenario actually, which is sort of the CBO scenario, is optimistic. That I think is a problem, is a serious problem. I don't have a number in mind for the 10-year, but I don't think 200% of GDP is we're not going to get there. I think the market will certainly revolt, so to speak, before we get that far.
Professor Gomez, it's Tim. Thanks for joining us. How much of your analysis also tries to factor in global goodwill for the U.S. And again, some of the political circus, some of the dynamics around the deficit. I think this is the reason why gold is going higher. Just curious your thoughts on kind of the U.S. discount rate.
I think that's absolutely true. And I think that is, to a large extent, and you guys just talked about it earlier, we're sort of using some of that goodwill in different ways and eroding it. And we're going to be able to rely a lot less on it than we have the last 10, 15 years, I think. Just thinking China's been a good partner in many ways in terms of for a number of years, in terms of sort of subsidizing our current account deficits and our endless borrowing and low savings. That's kind of ending. India is the growing country the next decade. That's not a high savings country. That's much more of a high capex kind of economy. That it's going to be a different world, and we're not going to have the ability to rely on countries like China, Japan, maybe Saudi Arabia, to buy some of our debt. And it's $1.2 trillion every single year. You just think through that, and it's really hard to see. At some point, markets will break.
Professor Gomez, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. Joao
Thank
Gomez
you,
of Wharton.
I think he's a bit more sanguine in terms of his view on debt to GDP. But what I'll say is, and I'm no historian, but no developed economy in the history of mankind has reached sort of 135% of debt to GDP and been able to recover. We're getting close to that, just a thought. And in terms of yields, I think Tim and I both agree, yields are going higher. I mean, I understand they're volatile here, but we've broken like a 40-year downtrend in the 10-year yield. And I still think, although yields can sort of fluctuate lower, I think the trend is still higher, and the market's not going to like it.
Coming up, a shakeup in the vice trade. Shares of Altria getting a boost as the tobacco maker offloads a big chunk of AB InBev. Why they're pulling back on the pints and what it means for the stock next. Plus, is it time to purify your portfolio? There's one area of the energy trade hitting record highs. Can the run continue? Fast Money's back in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. Shares of Altria jumping today on its announced plan to slash its 10% stake in Belgian beer company AB InBev. Altria plans to use the proceeds to fund additional buybacks of its own stock. It'll still have about an 8% stake in the Budweiser parent after the sale. AB InBev, meantime, falling on the news, it even suspended trading briefly in Belgium. Tim?
From a Bud perspective, the announcement of a secondary is never good. And, you just figure out the pricing and the market will figure it out. I think it's probably an opportunity ultimately for Bud. This is an Altria move. I'm long Altria. I've been long Altria a while. And at times you've been concerned about are they able to continue to at least grow earnings enough to keep a 9.5% dividend. And this basically says they're now upping the buyback to 3.4, this 2.4 sale. The growth also guide is now 2 to 4.5%. I think Altria shareholders should be really happy about this. And this is a company that has been able to divest some out of the tobacco space and into other parts of the consumer products or CPG. So I think in a world where free cash flow generating companies are attractive for some investors in some part of their portfolio, Altria to me just got better.
2 years sideways trade, seemingly breaking out now. Trough valuation, which has been the case for a while. You can actually start to make a feasible argument to actually want to be this long the stock for a move, maybe back up to 50. So percentage-wise, I think that's significant. I don't think it's that outlandish in this environment.
Early in the pot days, in the pot story, there was talk about a cigarette company, a tobacco company,
right,
merging or buying assets from a pot company. Have we gotten to that point yet now or no?
Well, you've seen actually British Tobacco's in Canada. So in places where they can be federally legal, the view is that tobacco companies, if anyone can operate in a compliant manner, right, in a very complicated regulatory environment, they're great at it. And that they're great at marketing and their distribution channels are what it's all about. So, yes, I think that that opportunity is there for big tobacco. They're just not going to do it until it's federally legal.
Right. Coming up, are all oil stocks created equally? We are drilling into one part of the energy market that is beating the competition this year. Why these names could be fueling up even more gains. We're pumping up your portfolio when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Energy stocks have been underperforming crude prices this year, with the underlying commodity up more than 13% versus less than 9% for the XLE. But there is one part of the sector that has been surging. Pippa Stevens has got more. Hey, Pippa.
Hey, Melissa. We're talking about the refiners, Marathon Petroleum, Valero, and Phillips 66 hitting record highs today, outperforming the broader energy complex. Fuel demand has remained steady while refinery utilization has pulled back, which has lifted product prices and therefore refiners' margins. Ahead of the spring and summer driving season, gasoline futures are already up nearly 30% this year. The widely followed 3-2-1 crack spread has come down sharply from recent highs, but it's still over $20, which again, Capital's John Kilduff called phenomenal, noting historically they were in the single digits and sometimes even negative. Now, in recent days, Ukraine has targeted Russian refineries, which could further tighten the global market, with Morgan Stanley pointing to an extended upcycle for the existing players. Melissa?
Pippa, thank you. Pippa Stevens. Guy, I know you're all over this trade.
Well, and she's done a remarkable job. Her and Brian Sullivan, great work.
She does her work.
But look, and we've talked about, I remember when Paul Sankey came on this show.
Yes.
I think it was early 2022. Early.
Okay.
And he mentioned
so
Marathon
like 10,
Petroleum.
10 appearances ago.
At least. Yeah. MPC was like a $65 stock. And I actually started to take a look at it. And it made sense what he said. Look at it now. All-time high. Phillips 66, we've known about. All-time high. Valero, absolutely the sweet spot. Effectively all. So these stocks all continue to work. Now, you'd be like, these moves have been nuts. Any more crazy than some of the things you've seen in technology? Absolutely not. So I still think there's room in energy.
Yeah, also the multiples are much, 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 much lower, obviously. But, you know, X in my Helm trade. Working out nicely. A little bit of refinery exposure
in your Helm trade.
Yeah, XLE.
Oh, right, yeah. Right.
Hold on.
For energy.
How does that, I don't understand.
It's not a real acronym. It's a faux acronym.
Right. You're a smart girl, Quaker. I mean, you know, that's not how you do it. But anyway.
That's how I did it.
It is what it is.
Yes.
You
hanging out there.
Now, if I had done that, you've been all, Karen does it, she gets dispensation, which is fine, by the way.
She gets dispensation.
Yeah.
I give Courtney a hard time.
You do, which,
by the way, guy, though, I think he needs to hear
the worst acronym.
You did a great job with your clan. Great job with your clan.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, nobody. At this point, really, nobody can touch. I mean, if you look at the clam, it's actually doing pretty well right now.
Good looking clam.
In terms of energy, Tim. Your Blicep, the C is Chevron.
It's Chevron. And I tell you what, so the big integrated names, depending on what part of their business is actually upstream, midstream, downstream, I mean, this is part of why they are integrated. And in that space, I talked about Chevron as the C in Blicep. How about Total? How about going over to Europe? Royal Dutch and Total, they pay higher dividends. They break even on their div at a lower oil price. And I actually think they're even more interesting on some level. But I did choose C in Chevron for the Blicep.
Yep. Up next, final trades. Time for the final trade, Tim.
Altria, again, I think there's more cash flow coming, possibly more divestitures, and maybe more cannabis at some point.
Karen.
Yes, Ulta. I want to hear the call, but I think it's a three-day rule. Let it settle out, and I like it, but I think you'll be able to buy it a little lower.
Dan?
Yeah, QQQ puts, looking at a couple months, look cheap as chips.
Did you know it's like the 25th anniversary of the QQQ this week?
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
They rang the bell, the investor.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Oddly enough, it's the 25th birthday of Tim Adami, who made me a father.
Oh.
Right.
Timmy.
Which just makes me. Makes me old.
That's great.
Colorful show tonight. A lot of dramatic pauses.
Fun.
Halliburton continues to go higher, Melissa.
All right. Thank you for watching Fast. See you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/fastmoneydisclaimer.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.